In the pursuit of truth and common sense in an unbelievable world, you're listening to the Right Mind Podcast with your host, Todd Showalter.
Hello, everybody. I'm Todd Showalter, and welcome to Right Mind. We've got a Titanic episode that's going to – the one that we talked about last week was interesting and very informative, but we decided to, like, follow that up with even more today. Today, my guest is Bill Willard. He's actually been on the expedition, believe it or not. He's written a book, and he's just taking the Titanic mystery and story a little bit further for us today. Bill, how you doing?
Fantastic, Todd. Appreciate you having me on your show.
Well, you know, we were talking off the air. It was not easy. It was almost like raising the Titanic with some of the technical difficulties over the past few weeks. But you are here now, and I want to thank you. So tell me, now, where are you located, by the way?
I'm in Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay. All right. North Carolina. And you're, you've got behind you, you were mentioning earlier, an actual piece, a relic of the Titanic that you actually, if I correct me if I'm wrong, that you actually recovered.
Our team in 1998 recovered the largest piece of Titanic. That is a side of the ship.
Okay.
Several hull plates. You see them riveted together. It's known as the big piece.
Okay. Okay. And you actually, so on an earlier show, and we were mentioning who I had on earlier, so I guess it's a small community. He was saying, well, hey, you know, I've never yet, you know, I have not been on one of these expeditions. So now you come into the picture here and you actually have been. He was saying this was some very expensive type of ordeal. Is this something that you had to like fork over a bunch of cash for, or were you like on some type of scientific committee?
Back in the day, I've been actually out there twice.
Okay.
What happened was in earlier, there are several groups that go out there. RMS Titanic Incorporated is the group that is licensed to recover artifacts. They are custodians of the artifacts. And in the 90s, they did scientific expeditions, and a lot of their shows were featured on the Discovery Channel.
Mm-hmm.
So they would get the Discovery Channel to help sponsor, and they would go out and do different expeditions. One of the areas that I was my specialty, why I was out there, is I developed a small camera system, a small ROV, designed to go deep inside the ship. And in 1998, we give it its first test run.
Wow. Okay.
While we were out there, our team raised the big piece. They recovered the D-deck door. In the movie, it's the one that Leo enters.
Okay.
At the last second, that type door. And we did a lot of things. A lot of fun we had near the end of it. We got hit by a hurricane. The East Coast people may remember Hurricane Bonnie from then. And that was totally opposite to the beginning of the trip.
Wow. Okay. So you are actually out now. Were you one of the first? I mean, because I know there were different teams that have gone out to it, but were you one of the very first to actually go out and raise some of this wreckage?
Well, the only group allowed to raise it is RMS Titanic
again. Okay.
And they've been out about 9 different times. There are other groups that have gone out to video. There was a big decision taken to the appellate court. They wanted to go out and film, and they didn't think that the recovery rights covered the videography rights.
Mm-hmm.
And the appellate court found in their favor, so they go out and they video. And the group that your previous guest was talking about, there is a group that goes out right now, and it's about $250,000 to go out with them.
Right. Okay. But that's not what you did. Okay.
No. Well, we built the ROV and were invited to be on the expedition, and the Discovery Channel treated us very nicely.
Wow. Okay. Now, how did you get involved? Tell me a little bit about you. What's your background? How did you get involved with this?
Long story. I started reading in middle school, and I read A Night to Remember by Walter Lord.
Right.
That's
okay.
Where most people begin their journey with Walter Lord's book. It's absolutely fabulous. I'm a visual reader, so I would put myself into the situations where people are describing.
Mm-hmm.
I actually could envision myself on the ship as I read. That's just me. That's a quirky thing about how I read. Later on in the 90s, with several movies came out in the 70s. Early 80s was Raise the Titanic, and all of us thought, wow, would that not be incredible if they could raise the ship off the bottom of the ocean? That would be so incredible. At that time, we were not definitely positive that it had split into two parts, as some people said that it did. They offered coal from the wreck site for sale. The courts approved the sale of the coal, not artifacts, but the sale of coal. And everyone who purchased coal got an offer to go out to the expedition on a cruise ship and to be a part of the crew, the work in 1996. That was the first attempt to raise the big piece. Mm-hmm. Due to complications that were external, not caused by the recovery group, the big piece was dropped and had to go back down to the ocean. So I met all the people that were involved, and I said, your ROV gets some incredible pictures from inside the ship, but why don't you go deep inside the ship? To me, the places that I really want to see, you know, they show the bow, they show the engines, they show the steering column, which is very prominent in photos. But the staterooms is what I think are the hidden treasures, is looking in those staterooms. Everybody that went on the ship carried all their belongings in carry bags, especially in third class. So they could recover some of those bags, conserve them, and then find out things about families that all we know about are names. And I think that would be, that's what I was really working toward, is eventually going down into those third class rooms that are still intact.
Now, did you do this eventually? I mean, did
you? The ROV went down. It did work.
Okay.
We had to vacate the site early due to Hurricane Bonnie, which was going about 325 miles south of us, was the projected path about 9 o'clock at night. So we were all very happy about that. And when we woke up about 6 a.m., the storm had turned directly at us in the middle of the night. So they were battening down the hatches, to use a cliche. They were tying everything down. They were letting us know, do not go outside once the storm hits, because if it washes you overboard, we'll probably never find you.
Hmm.
And we rode 80-foot waves for 17 hours.
Wow. Okay. So when you
up, going down, then going back up, and then going back down, and it was pretty stout.
Wow. Makes me a little seasick just listening to you explain it. When you're out, how long do these expeditions take? I mean, from the time, when you actually, where did you actually leave from? I mean, you leave from the U.S. and here. And I mean, when you go out, I mean, is it a few days? Is it a week? I mean, how long are you actually exploring the Titanic?
For the 98 trip, they had several things planned. The first objective was to raise the big piece.
Okay.
They were also going to do the first live show from the bottom of the ocean at Titanic. This was a cooperative effort between Discovery and NBC. The two partnered together for this part of the expedition. The live show was fantastic. It was number two as far as the viewing audience, only behind Charles and Diana's wedding for the number of people that watched that show. They had several other things they were going to do the second half of the expedition. I flew up to Boston the last week of July, around the 26th. And about 3 days later, we set sail for the wreck site. It takes about 2.5 days to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we returned back to Boston on Friday, right before Labor Day, so early September. So I was out there that entire time. We did go to Halifax for 2 days in order to offload the NBC crew. They had to go to something in Ireland. I think Bill Clinton was going to Ireland at that time, so they were going to cover him. And we took on more supplies, turned around, headed back to the wreck site.
Gotcha. Okay. What are some of the things, because you obviously go into it and you've read books and so you already have some preconceived ideas of what to expect. What were some of the big surprises that you came across when you actually saw it firsthand?
The footage from inside, there were several of us that would camp out in front of the banks of the monitors, the different cameras that were active while they were down there, and we would observe and comment and point things out to each other. to me, still what is amazing is when a camera will go inside a stateroom or a part of the interior, and a lot of it is intact. The wood is decayed, but you can see, for example, in the men's smoking room, the stained glass windows still have all their image, their crystals still in the right place, their glass mm-hmm. crystals. You can still see what the image looked like. It's intact. It's whole. You can still see parts or remnants of a bed frame, door frames. You can see parts of dressers, fireplaces, even the framing of chairs. Some of the cloth is gone, but you can still see that what it used to be and identify parts of it. There's one photograph that was taken in 1993, and for years they didn't know what it was, and it was identified as a photograph of the gymnasium door because you could actually make out a stationary bicycle from the gymnasium in the image.
Hmm.
And so that's recoverable. That is right there at the edge and can be brought back up. And that, believe it or not, it has a history. John Jacob Astor sat his wife, and then he took his pocket knife and cut his life belt to show his wife what was in the life belt. It was cork.
Hmm.
Lawrence Beasley has a famous picture that was taken with him sitting on one of the two stationary bikes. So there are prominent stories behind those two stationary bikes. And each room that was occupied has a history. It has a story to tell still inside of it. Albert and Sylvia Caldwell left $100 in gold in their bureau, in their bedside table. And they didn't pick it up before they left. It's still in that room. $100 wow. in 1912 gold.
Wow. Okay. So, well, that leads me to the next question. Now, you said everything it's owned by the RMS Titanic Association. I mean, so if I wanted to just go out there and check it out, I mean, I couldn't do it. It's all off limits. Is there like a high security around all of that still, or is it just I assume they don't have tour boats going out there to show people.
They do have that Ocean Gate has a tour that goes out there. That's the one that costs $250,000 to be a mission specialist.
Right.
Again, they're very good about not touching. They're not supposed to do any recovery. All they can do is look and see and film. If you wanted to go out and recover something, it would have to be with the permission of the company. And they're very protective of the taking care of the ship. There is not anybody on patrol out there. It's 90 miles from Halifax. It's out on the ocean. There have been expeditions that have gone out there, and it's believed that some of them may have tried to recover things. Mm. It is alleged that they have recovered things. So it's, you know, you can't police it. It's 2.5 sure. miles
down. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Yeah, so there's only so much you can do. Now, you wrote a book. Yeah, so tell me a little bit about your book, and is that available for sale right now? What's the name of it?
Absolutely. It came out about 4 years ago. Our expedition team brought together some of the best people in different careers, different oceanographic careers. It brought together people from the broadcast industry from several different areas. It brought together scientific researchers that all have different fields. And we were all in one little microcosm, in one little small area for a short period of time, 6 weeks. And what I decided to do is to honor their efforts. I contacted as many people that I could find, and I said, I'm going to write a book. Send me your thoughts, your feelings, your memories, the good things, bad things. Let me know paragraphs. Just send me paragraphs, and I'm going to put your paragraph in the book. And I did that. I put what they said with their name on it so that they have something in the book. I'll lead up to an event and then put down what different people say about that event. And that makes it our effort. The name of it is Our Story, celebrating the 20th anniversary of the 1998 Titanic exhibition. I'm tongue-tied on Friday. And the purpose of it was to honor all these people. Several of our team have passed away, and we have tributes to them. And we have Bob McEwen, who used to be on 2020, but is now on the Canadian show, wrote a beautiful piece. Also on 20 and 20 at that time was Sarah James. And now she's got a, she married. So she's got a different last name, but she's broadcasting in Australia. Mm-hmm. And she wrote a beautiful piece. And just so many different people thought this is such a great idea. And they either sent me pages from their diary or things that they had written. And I included a lot of it in there. And the only edits that I tried to make were maybe grammar, to make all the grammar the same parts of speech, you know, technical things, not content. And we tried to include as many as we could. It ended up, I was hoping for 70 or 80 pages, and it's like 280 pages counting the photos.
Yeah, okay.
But it has received extremely high praise from the people who were on the expedition. But the public that is that, you know, it's a niche book. Not everybody will like to read about a Titanic expedition, but if you are into this, it's an outstanding book. I'm had a man in Seattle message me on Facebook, and he said, "I want you to know I was in tears in parts of your book. It is just incredible how you tell this story about the big piece."
Wow. Okay. And the big piece again is behind you. And for those of you listening and can't see it, he has a very large, I guess, iron metal piece of the actual ship with the portholes and all of that. Now, when you, now, did you actually discover this piece? I mean, what was that like? I mean, you hear it's all got this romanticism attached to it. You know, the Titanic, it's all mystical and everything. But when you're actually, you know, faced with something like this face to face, I mean, that's got to be a wild feeling. I mean, to realize that you're actually looking at, you know, the actual piece, the ship and everything that went down, not some fabricated movie or something like that. What was that like? I mean, I couldn't imagine that.
You're exactly right. The power of seeing this piece come out of the water was overwhelming. I was not a part of the group that identified it to recover. That happened before I became involved. They chose this piece because it was a smaller piece that could be recovered. It weighed 17 tons. There was a lower end of it that was hanging down, sort of like a panhandle type piece. And that had to be removed. The lower piece, it's called Little Piece, is in Orlando, Florida at the Titanic exhibit there. And this big piece is on display at the Luxor in Las Vegas at the artifact exhibition there. When this piece came out of the water, George Tulloch summed it up very nicely. He said, "Look at those portholes. It's hard to believe." And then he said, "The last time the sun went through those portholes was April 14th of 1912.
Wow.
And all of us were going, and then we saw it more than just a piece of iron that was on the side of the ship. This big piece represents 2,208 people and their journey. 1,496 did not survive that night.
Right.
Most of them passed away from hypothermia. The water was extremely cold. And even though we don't know a lot about them, the ship knows because it contains their belongings. They have recovered bags off of the debris field. The debris field is between the two halves of the ship. And in the debris field, they'll bring up a bag and they'll find, whose bag was this? And they'll take care of it and they'll respect it. And they'll go, "Well, this fella played the clarinet. Look, he's even got clarinet music in there. And he was a salesman because some of his catalogs are in there." And then they found love letters from his girlfriend, and they were able to identify him and her. And we uncovered a whole new story that we didn't know about.
Wow. Now, do you, when these things are recovered, I mean, is there any attempt to actually reach out to relatives and may, you know, want to know about this? I mean, have you contacted anybody down the road that was either a grandchild or something like that?
The relatives find out about it. Yes,
they find out. Okay, sure. They find out. They always do, Bill. Yeah.
Well, that was for sure. An example, these letters I was telling you about were written to Howard Irwin from Pearl Shuttle. And a buddy of mine who passed away a few years ago he was a Yankees fan, and he was turning his television to the Yankees baseball game, and he saw a picture, and he goes, "That looks like my grandfather's sister, Pearl." And then all of a sudden they say, "These letters are from Pearl Shuttle." And he's going, "I got to get in touch with people. That is my great aunt."
Wow.
And so George Tulloch goes, "You're a relative? Oh, this is remarkable." And they began to tell him what they'd found and what it was. And the story of the Pearl Shuttle Howard Irwin romance came out. And it just opened a new page that no one had known about since 1912 or 19, you know, a few years afterwards. So those things do happen. They really do. The ownership of the artifacts, some people want to know about that. Legally, the insurance paid off the claims. So the insurance company owned the ship and the rights to everything in the ship.
Really? Okay. That's
like they do with a car. If they total your car, the insurance company then owns your car.
Is the insurance company, are they still around? It wasn't like Allstate or something like that.
It was Lloyd's of London.
Oh, Lloyd's of London. Okay, that makes sense.
RMS Titanic had to pay Lloyd's to acquire the rights for those artifacts.
Wow.
They had to pay a very large sum, several million dollars, and that reimbursed Lloyd's for what they had paid out and, you know, some other fees and things like that. So technically, the company became custodian of those artifacts. You know, some other people say, well, why don't they give it to their grandchild or to one of the grandchildren? But think about that. If they recover a hat that mm-hmm. belonged to John Smith. Now, John Smith in 1912 had three children who ended up having three children each, who ended up having two children each. You're looking at 64 kids or 60 people that are alive right now that would say, "I want the hat."
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well,
the value of the hat would be significant because it was their grandfather or great grandfather's hat, but because it was a piece recovered from Titanic. So all these things would end up being sold. They would end up being auctioned off. And right now the artifacts, one of the stipulations is that the artifacts must be kept in a collection, and they must have exhibitions to show those artifacts and perpetuate telling the story.
Wow. Now, when you went out there, I mean, obviously the Titanic was sunk by an iceberg. I mean, is it still surrounded? I mean, I know the Earth hasn't totally changed, but I mean, were you out there with icebergs and everything like that when you were exploring all this?
We were out there in July and August.
Okay.
We did not see icebergs.
All right. But
icebergs come down what is known as the Labrador Current. They come down around the edge of Newfoundland, between Newfoundland and Greenland is where they come down. And then they wash down toward the Gulf Stream, which is coming up. So the warmer waters of the Gulf Stream hit these cold waters coming from the polar regions. And that's chaotic and it's cold. But the icebergs typically end up melting. Titanic just had an incredible fluke system.
Right.
They were going on a southerly route to avoid any iceberg trouble, but it just so happened that some of them were still intact, moving in an ice, pack ice is what it's known as, like a large area moving together with small icebergs in it. And this happened to be a big iceberg in it. And that's what happened.
I never realized this. So you're saying, okay, so typically, so like where you were, I mean, you didn't see any icebergs. So this was just a random thing that the route that they took, they just had bad luck and crashed into an iceberg that typically wouldn't be there?
Not have been that low. They would have been closer to land where the current was, but they took a more southerly route. But, you know, again, they were in April. So
right.
It was unusual for icebergs to be that low. It happened, but it was unusual.
Wow.
So our water was probably in the 70s. A couple of people jumped in the water and wanted to swim a little bit.
Really?
One man fell off of a Zodiac and swam a little bit, not intentionally, but he hit a wave and bumped off and had to pull him back on board very quickly.
Wow. So it's also, so if they had gone, if they had done this maiden voyage, say like in July or August, it probably would have been okay.
That's a very good possibility.
Wow. That's really interesting.
This We're is almost, one of these, if yeah. anything could go wrong, for one event to happen, everything went wrong at the correct time.
Oh, wow.
If they would have turned the wheel a little earlier, if they would have noticed the iceberg a few miles earlier, they could have avoided it. If they would have turned the wheel one degree, any point during that trip, 1 degree, it would have missed the iceberg.
So, wow, that's incredible. I never realized that. Huh. Yeah, because I thought, and I think a lot of people do, because you see the movie and everything like that, at least the fictionalized one, and they're surrounded by icebergs. It's almost like they're the North Pole, but this was a total fluke. Wow, that's something else. Okay, well, okay, we're just about out of time, but you've done everything. You've seen it. You've written books about it. Has everything pretty much at this point been seen and done, or are there still certain things that you personally would like to explore and uncover that we still haven't seen or known about yet?
They probably know 5% about the ship.
5%. Okay.
5%, because it was that large. There are so many rooms within, with things in it, with stories to tell.
Right.
So maybe 5% of what's inside.
So what's your plan? Are you, I mean, are you going to go back? I mean, are you going to do a follow-up book? I mean, if you've only, you know, if you've got 95% more to explore at this time or investigate, what would be your next step? And what would you personally like to find out about?
I'm not a part of the team.
Right.
I do not work for RMS Titanic Inc. at this time.
Okay.
If I were to be pulled in and to work on an expedition and we were allowed to do some interior, we still have our expedition plan that we had worked on for 2000, the year 2000. We had planned on going back with George Tulloch, and we had specific targets that we wanted to go to. We had third class rooms, we had first class rooms, we had second class rooms, and those were occupied by different people. And we wanted to see and locate and look and just to see what was in those rooms. James Cameron did a few of them when he was out there filming for his movie.
Mm-hmm.
And you see some of those. Ghosts of the Abyss was a movie that Cameron did in addition to his magnificent $4 billion blockbuster, Titanic. But in Ghosts of the Abyss, it shows some of his interior footage, which was made with state-of-the-art camera systems and things like that. People just get overwhelmed. They can sit there and watch it on their TV. They can watch it at a theater when it used to be on the IMAX. It's just overwhelming to see what's down there. And for every room that it shows, there's hundreds more that were occupied.
Wow. Okay. So pardon the pun, it's just the tip of the iceberg, huh? So there's a lot more.
You did that. I saw what you did.
I know. I'm sure that's not the first time you heard that either, Bill. I
get a drum roll.
Well, you know, we will put that in along with the cover of your book. Again, give me the title of that again, because we'll put it on the
screen. The title of it is Our Story.
Our Story.
Celebrating the 20th anniversary of the 1998 Titanic Expedition.
Okay, and that's available, I take it, on Amazon, or where can people get it? It is on both.
The easiest way to search for it is with my name, Bill Willard.
Okay.
And that's Our Story. It'll go straight to that title. Okay. You'll see the big piece in the water on the cover.
Wow. And that's a fascinating piece for those of you listening and can't see it. It's kind of creepy, but it's also, I'm sure, tells a lot of stories. Bill, this has been fascinating. Like I said, you know, I've said for the last couple of weeks, I've always been fascinated by the Titanic. And the thing is, regardless of what show or what series of stories that we uncover, there's always, it just leads to wanting to know more and more and more. And I'd love to have you back on and, you know, tell us a little bit more about what you're up to and maybe some things that we can hit on today. Absolutely. Sound good?
Can I put in one last plug?
Yeah, we can do everything you want, Bill. It's your time here. Go ahead.
August 9th, 10th, and 11th.
Okay, August
is the 25th anniversary of the day the big piece was raised. We are having a convention or a conference.
Okay.
Titanic Con 2023 will be in Las Vegas. And what we're doing is we're bringing back the team that brought this up, the expedition team. And we're also having one day that we're hopefully going to devote to having some actors from the Cameron movie present for some autographs, stories and things like that. It's a 3-day event. It's going to be limited in our seating. We have 250 spots available, but it's going to be a great get together, fabulous place. Everybody that wanted to go to Las Vegas, this is their opportunity. It's going to be very affordable, and they can find out information about that if you're on Facebook. TitanicCon 23 is our group. Feel free to join, or you can find out more information on the website voyagesexploretitanic.com.
Okay. Okay.
And look for the tab that says Titanic Conference.
Wow. Okay. It's August 9th, 10th, and 11th. So, okay. Gotcha. TitanicCon 23. That sounds pretty cool. Yeah. Hey, I'd like to check
that out. Great time. Love to have a lot of your listeners come out. Tell us where you heard about it from. And if, you know, enough people come out, we'll invite Todd to come out and do a couple of live shows.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. There you go. And then maybe, you know, I'll get hit by a Titanic, by an iceberg on the way out or something like that. Maybe not. I don't know. Bill, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed it, and I'd love to have you back again. And you know, we hit a few icebergs just getting this interview together. So again, I apologize for that. You guys out there don't have to know about that. But Bill, he's a trooper. Any last words before we sign off?
I just appreciate your listeners thinking about a story that happened a long time ago, but still has significance today. The Cameron movie comes back out in theaters February 10th, and we have an entire generation of people that have never seen that movie in a theater. Seeing it on a TV is one thing. Seeing it in a movie theater, it is a totally different movie. It's upgraded to 4K and 3D, so it will be an incredible watch.
Yeah,
get on your telly.
Heck of a
movie. Thank you for having me, Todd.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you very much, Bill. And thank you, whether you've been watching or listening. I'm Todd Showalter, and this is Right Mind. And remember, like I always say, if you don't have a right mind, you don't have a mind at all. Till next time. Bye-bye.
This has been the Right Mind Podcast with Todd Showalter.